I pay my taxes, I work hard, why should those people, you know, benefit from my hard work? Well, we're spending 3 to 5 times more on serving them when they're homeless than we would serving them in supported affordable housing. So strictly, you know, looking at it from strictly a financial perspective, it just makes sense to house people.
You just heard Chloe Udaly and Margot Black speak at a forum on housing justice at Southminster Presbyterian Church in Beaverton, Oregon. The forum was held on October 11th. This is KBOO.
On November 18th, from 8 p.m. until 10, from the grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and commentary, we will focus on Mr. Gil Scott-Heron. Gil Scott-Heron established the attitude and stylistic vocabulary of socially conscious music in America. His music was powerful, his lyrics relevant, and his voice beautiful. So join us from the grassroots, November 18th from 8 to 10 p.m. on 90.7 FM, KBOO Portland.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fagering, and the show is Fight the Empire. We were scheduled to record an interview with Bernie Sanders, but at last minute, there was a change in his plans, so we weren't able to do that. I think he was probably on his way to North Dakota to speak to the pipeline protesters, and then he had to get back to Washington because he was sort of in a battle with Charles Schumer to be the Senate Minority Leader. So we were not able to get Bernie Sanders, but he will be. Well, the good news, the bad news. He's got a book out called Our Revolution, A Future to Believe In. And he is going to be in Portland at Powell's Books on December 1st, which I guess is 2 weeks from today. The bad news is I think it is already sold out. You might have to check with Powell's about that. So, but we'll talk about the election a little bit anyway. There's so much to talk about. Start out with California historian Mike Davis, who has a very interesting article sort of analyzing the election results. And it's on his blog, put out by Verso Books. I've also seen this article on the Portside website. But anyway, Mike Davis on the election. He says, calm down, take a stiff drink, and look at the actual results, which he did with in some detail. I can't go into all of it, but he sort of, some of his conclusions were, this is not a Trump win, it's a Hillary Clinton loss. He says the Democratic National Committee failed to mount a 50-state strategy, and Hillary Clinton failed to even visit Wisconsin once, which turned out to be a swing state. I think it might be the state that cost her the election. And Mike Davis concludes that the real revolution was the Bernie Sanders campaign. He is saying that the Democratic National Committee is in disarray and, quote, we must hurry to fix things. So that's what Mike Davis has to say. But on the other hand, we have to remember that Hillary Clinton actually got more votes than Bernie than Donald Trump. I think last I heard, she was over 1 million votes ahead, still counting. And so we have to ask, did Donald Trump get a rigged mandate? What kind of a mandate does he have when his opponent was 1 million votes ahead of him? But then on the other hand, Greg Palast says 1 million voters were purged. So the totals for Hillary, if they hadn't been purged, might be even higher. But then a poll came out recently that says that 74% of the American people accept the result. They're okay with it. 67% of the Clinton voters accept the results. So that is very interesting. It seems to me that the elections are rigged, definitely are rigged. They've been rigged for hundreds of years because that's what the Electoral College does. It rigs the vote. It takes the actual vote count and it kind of plays a few little, puts a little few corrective measures. Now, some historians will tell you there's a good reason for that. It sort of helps out the smaller states and whatever. But whatever the intentions are, you have to accept that the Electoral College rigs the vote. And I think considering all that Donald Trump's mandate is definitely rigged and questionable. I think he should be reminded of that. Every time Donald Trump wants to do something outrageous, we should remind him of the fact that he is a minority president. The majority of the American voters disagree with him. So one thing that President-elect Trump did, he had a substantive phone conversation with Russian President Putin. This is very interesting. One of the few sensible things that Trump did say during the campaign was that, the United States should get along with any country that wants to get along with us, that he's not looking to pick a fight or anything like that. And you would think that when Donald Trump says something intelligent, we should second it. We should treasure it because that doesn't happen that often. Instead, he got totally trashed. He was called a Putin puppet and whatever, Putin's useful idiot and whatever. And I think this is totally wrong. Putin was blamed for the leaks that showed. So going back to these leaks, they showed that the Democratic National Committee were playing games, were favoring the Clinton campaign over the Sanders campaign. And instead of owning up to that, Hillary Clinton's response was to sort of try and cast the blame on Putin for exposing the truth of what's going on here. And to me, this is really sleazy behavior. It's one of the things that really made me dislike her campaign was, kind of doing this neo-McCarthyism on Russia as though they could kind of manipulate our elections. Here the U.S. has been manipulating elections around the world for quite a while, and all of a sudden we're bent out of shape when we suspect that the Russians are doing it back. And speaking of manipulating elections, one of the prime manipulators is the National Endowment for Democracy. It's supposedly an NGO that's funded by the taxpayers, and it's supposed to spread democracy around the world. Well, the head of the National Endowment for Democracy is a guy named Carl Gershman, and he actually came out publicly, wrote an article saying that the U.S., America should arrange it so that Putin gets overthrown. To me, this is unheard of. He is spreading democracy by calling for some kind of overthrow of an elected leader in a foreign government. You may not like Putin. There's a lot of things to criticize him for, but he is elected, and he seems to have the support of the Russian people for very good reasons, which we might go into. It goes back a little ways into history. So contrast that. Donald Trump says, reasonable things about Russia, love getting along with anybody who gets along with us. Contrast that with Carl Gershman, who I suspect was a Clinton supporter, calling for Putin's overthrow. And so one thing, very interesting thing, is that Bill Clinton once got paid $500,000 for giving a speech in Moscow. That's $500,000. Paid to Bill Clinton to give a speech in Moscow back in June 2010. And it had to do with, it's a long story, you can look it up, but it has to do with one Russian company financing a uranium deal. But the story was in the New York Times, you could look it up, April 23rd, 2015, last year, and the headline is Cash Flow to Clinton Foundation Amid Russian Uranium Deal. The deal itself is rather complicated, but the basic fact is that Bill Clinton got paid $500,000 for giving a speech in Moscow. So I don't think anything was really said about that during the campaign. So, you know, the history of the West's relations with Russia really go back quite a ways. During when Russia was ruled by the Tsars, the West disliked Russia. Then later on, after the Communist Revolution, the West still disliked Russia. In fact, we even sent armies in there to stop the revolution. And then after the Communist government fell, under Putin, we still dislike Russia. It's like Russia cannot do anything right. There are some people who think this goes back a long ways in history, going back to the split in the Christian Church between the Roman Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church, and possibly goes back even further than that. But it is really kind of amazing that we have this antipathy to Russia. I have heard some of Putin's speeches. I have seen him on TV talking to people, and I've read his remarks, and everything he says seems really kind of low-key and nothing that problematic. I don't hear him ranting and raving or anything, and so I really have to wonder, what is the reason for this? My own suspicion is that Putin is smarter than anybody in Washington. That's one thing. The second thing is that he has a simpler agenda. I think his basic agenda is to keep Russia from being embattled by Islamic extremists. And to do that, he's venturing abroad a little bit into Syria and other countries. But that is his basic agenda. And the U.S. agenda is very different. The U.S. wants to fight ISIS and the Islamic extremists, but at the same time, the U.S. seems to have ideas of using these extremists against Russia, which does not work out very well. The U.S. is trying to juggle too many balls at once. That's why it keeps dropping the ball. And so Putin is making all kinds of inroads in the Middle East. He seems to have made a great effect in the Syrian war, which, as long as outside people keep funding the Islamic extremists and the Assad government, this war can go on forever until there's nobody left. But if I don't know. I mean, the way out of the Syrian war is something else. But the U.S. has been sort of at cross purposes with itself there. But anyway, that is sort of my take on what's going on in Russia. If anybody wants to call in with a comment, the number is 503-231-8187. It's very interesting. We talk a lot about corruption here and in Russia, too. And just the other day, the Russian economy minister, a man named Alexei Ulyukayev, was arrested and charged with taking $2 million in bribes. So this is one of the top officials in the Russian government, and he's been arrested and charged with bribery. And it's not just him, a whole bunch of others in nationwide in Russia is part of some kind of anti-corruption drive. So it seems to me this is a pretty, you know, we talk about corruption in Russia, and which is true, but I think a lot of people are saying that one thing Putin has been doing ever since he took office, was that about 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago, was fighting some of these oligarchs. And this should be, if this is true, then this should be applauded. You'd like to see some of the oligarchs in this country get into trouble. It doesn't seem to happen very often, but it'd be really nice to see it happen. We have an economy. I mean, there is all sorts of corruption going on here. And it kind of, people seem to be aware of it, but there's not so, very little seems to be done about it. Nobody's really paying any penalty. You know, a few fines maybe for some of these corporations and banks. But other than that, they seem to be getting away with this stuff. So getting back to the campaign, I think the Democratic strategy was really flawed. Robert Reich had an interesting article on this, basically, is that the Democrats abandoned the working class. And you could say this began back in when Bill Clinton was president. He moved, the Democrats used to be the party of the working class, as Robert Reich pointed out. And under President Bill Clinton, we sort of the Democrats moved toward the center. And the reason for that strategy was that was where the big bucks for campaign funding was. And also the Democratic honchos felt that, well, the working class, the progressives or whatever, they can sort of be safely ignored because they have no place else to go. They are stuck with the Democrats, the lesser of two evils. That's what the lesser of two evils strategy all is all about. And this went on. Bill Clinton was pretty successful at that. I mean, he was two terms as president. But eventually, the Republicans figured out how to do an end run around this strategy. Now it seems that a lot of working people feel that they may not like what Trump says about one thing or another, but they see a vote for him as sort of their only hope, their only way out of the economic mess that they are in, which the sort of the elites on the East and West Coast seem to ignore. And so they voted for Trump. And so will the working people be Republicans for the rest of their lives? We hope not. We have a call. Charlie's on the line. Morning, Charlie.
Morning, Pierre. I'd like to ask you, have you ever seen that video? And this goes way back to the 80s where Oprah is interviewing Donald Trump.
No, I don't. I think I might have heard him. Tell me about it.
Well, I heard about this. Well, I saw this video on the internet, YouTube. And it's a video of Oprah, who's she's interviewing people, and she's interviewing Donald Trump. And, you know, it's a young Donald Trump, and she is asking him all kinds of questions. And they kind of get around to this country, and she says, "Well, Donald, what are you going to do about it?" And he says he's thinking about running for president. And Oprah says, "Donald, you'd make a wonderful president."
Oh, no.
Well, that's what she said back then. Okay. So, but
might have been a different Donald back then too, because I think he's changed his positions on a lot of things.
Well, yeah, everybody changes, but, you know.
Well, I think he used to be actually considered sort of a Democrat, you know? I mean, it's, in fact, he was even friends with the Clintons, which leads some people to suspect that the Clintons put him up to running in the first place because they thought he'd be an easy candidate to beat.
He'd be easy to beat.
I don't know if I go for that theory.
I was considering that one myself. Mm-hmm. But, you know, let's go back to the 80s once again. And you remember that film about Romeo and Juliet with who was it in there? Denzel Washington is, but anyway, Romeo and Juliet. This film really brings it out, where you have these gangs. It brings Romeo and Juliet to modern day Los Angeles, for instance.
Now, kind of like the West Side Story, or what?
Well, yeah, but Shakespeare's point back when he wrote Romeo and Juliet wasn't just, he was depicting, on one end he was depicting this love affair between Romeo and Juliet,
mm-hmm.
but in the background you have what England was back then, and it was a country ruled by gangs. You know, you had these dukes and earls and counts and whatever you had there, and
mm-hmm.
king, but it was a country ruled by factions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is what we have today. We have a country that is ruled by an oligarchy.
That's true. Yes.
And so we have this election, you know, and we think, well, we elected this guy or that guy. But when you look at it, look at these voting machines. I mean, all of them are computerized, and all it takes is just somebody manipulating some votes in a computer in a swing state or any other state. And so because of this electoral system that we have, it's a lot easier to manipulate than it would be if you just had the straight vote, you know.
That's true.
Even
I guess
if you had the straight vote,
mm-hmm.
because everything is on a computer,
mm-hmm.
there's all kinds of shenanigans are now possible. I don't understand why it is that the people of this country can't figure that out, that if in a national election, and of course even when there were paper ballots, ballot boxes were getting thrown in the rivers and stuff.
At least as evidence, you know.
Yeah, but in these modern times, a person could have a ballot, and it ought to be instant runoff for one thing. You have
mm-hmm.
a ballot, and you have a carbon copy. You mark out your ballot, you put it in the box, you keep the carbon copy, and it's got a serial number on it.
Right.
And then you look at that serial number, and that serial number is going to appear in an Excel web sheet on the internet, showing how you voted, and all of those votes would be. You could look at the calculations. You look at everything, and see how everything is tallied.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't be able to change it, but you'd be able to look at it.
Right. Well, you raise some good points.
So why the hell don't we have something like that? I'll tell you why we don't. It's because if we did, then it would be much harder for the oligarchs to swing the vote.
Okay. I do have another caller waiting, but also I think we have this love affair with technology too. But anyway,
yeah. Well, we're getting with that kind of technology.
So our new religion is high tech. But I think let me go on to our next caller now. But thanks, Michael's on the line. Morning, Michael.
Good morning, Mr. Fogren. Good morning, and thanks to the caller previously, who brought out the. I actually saw the interview between Oprah and Mr. Trump on television.
Oh, you did? Oh, what was it like?
So I don't remember. I did do a study of sensationalism in tabloid television programs,
mm-hmm.
which included a study of Oprah, Geraldo, and Phil Donahue in a comparison in the Portland market. So,
mm-hmm.
But anyway, I also wish to point out, I didn't see the actual film about Romeo and Juliet, but I think the caller was comparing us to Fort Medieval Italy instead of England.
Well, that's where Rome. Yeah, right.
Yeah, it was Verona.
It was an English play about Italian politics.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Well, you still have factions and gangs and all sorts of.
Yeah.
weird stuff going on.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like a whole rearrangement of city states, and I've read the Nine Nations of North America,
mm-hmm.
and I've been thinking we might have a Mexitopia or something in the next 25
Well, was it just
years.
About a week or two ago? Some people here in Portland, they were going to have a petition for Oregon to secede from the United States.
Yeah.
And it got in the news, but right away they got a bunch of death threats, so they withdrew the petition or something.
Wow. That's unfortunate that so much ire was vented against the proposal, but I guess it was circumspect to withdraw it for the present.
Well, I think something like that may happen anyway, just because if we start running out of fuel and there's less trade and transportation or whatever, I think a large country like the United States, where more real decisions will be made on a local level, and this will just kind of tend to make people feel like, Washington doesn't really matter much in their lives. They won't actually say we're seceding. They'll just go about their business, with the city and county and state politics, and just leave it at that. But effectively, the United States has kind of fallen apart into various regions. And this happens without declaring anything, you know?
Yeah. I didn't follow a lot of the elections, and eventually I will catch up on it. But I do feel at the local level that on many levels my voice and the voice of many like me are being represented now,
mm-hmm.
in the city, county, and state level. So I do feel somewhat optimistic.
Yeah,
I voted for Jill Stein.
Mm-hmm.
So I do feel somewhat optimistic about the future.
Well, thanks for your call.
Yeah, you're welcome, and good day. Bye-bye.
Well, this kind of brings me to maybe one last little point. You know, we have this whole global economy thing, which is basically is falling apart. I was doing a little research, and back in 2005, Tony Blair was talking about globalization, and he said, quote, "You might as well debate whether autumn should follow summer." That was Tony Blair back in 2005. Well, then came the 2008 economic crash. Guess what, Tony? The world trade is indeed slowing down, and all by itself because of various reasons. And so we've got this economy now where it creates, do people know how many billionaires there are in the United States? There are 536 billionaires in the United States alone. So that is what our economy is doing. It creates billionaires on the one hand and thousands and thousands and thousands of homeless on the other hand. We have another call. Carol is on the line. Good morning, Carolyn.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to know when the Electoral College is going to vote. My understanding of that body is that it's a peacemaker between the vote of the people, which we are in Oregon by paper ballot,
mm-hmm.
and the count of the states, how they all tabulate up according to their allotted Democrat and Republican.
Well, let me quickly give you some kind of answer. I think the Electoral College meets in December around...
When? What date?
Oh, I don't know the exact date, but I would
That's
say...
That's what I'm asking you for.
I'd say...
Do the research for that.
I would say around the 12th or 13th,
okay.
Somewhere about a couple of weeks into December, they meet.
Okay, next.
And what they can do is the electors don't have to vote the way the... if the electors, say, in Wisconsin feel that, that they can switch votes. It can be done.
Yes. But it's I want to say something about that very briefly.
Real
I'm
fast.
I'm a worker, and I need to be at work at 10 a.m.
Okay.
Now, my understanding is they could put a Republican in, they could put a Democrat in, or they could put a dark horse like Lincoln may have been.
They could.
Now, if they put a Republican in, my My take is that Merkley will proceed with secession. There, California.
Well, hey, we. The music
Oregon,
is playing.
Hawaii and another state all voted predominantly Democratic.
Well, I am running out of time. I'd love to talk about this more, but I am running out of time, and we have another show waiting in the wings, so we're going to have to leave it at that. Thank you for listening and calling. This has been Fight the Empire. Stay tuned for Air Cascadia.
Hey, good morning. Yes, Air Cascadia is hopefully up next. Haven't seen Chris Andre in the building just yet, but she is coming up in a couple minutes. Also this morning at 10:15, join us for Flashpoints with host Dennis Bernstein. He continues a week of broadcasts from Standing Rock and call from Canadian Indigenous activists to hold Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to his promises. And then at 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman talks to author Taihimba Jess, whose book Olio presents a musical history of the long fight against slavery and a subversive account of how black musicians have been exploited. That's all coming up right after Air Cascadia with Chris Andre, coming up in a couple minutes here on The Boo. Hey, thanks KBOO members for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate. Thanks for listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Fix-It Fair on Saturday, November 19th at 9:30 a.m. at Ron Russell Middle School in Portland. The Portland Fix-It Fair features exhibits and workshops from numerous community partners talking about issues such as water and energy savings, home and personal health, food and nutrition, community resources, recycling, and more. Childcare and lunch will be provided. Again, that's the Portland Fix-It Fair, Saturday, November 19th, from 9:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. at Ron Russell Middle School, 3955 Southeast 112th Avenue in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.